Welcome to Random Gaming Talk. It's Entertainment Talk's podcast for video games. I'm your host, Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is Robert. How's it going?
It's going good. I'm not nearly as sick as I was last week, although
Good.
That's not that high of a bar to clear.
Yeah, it's true. Cool. What games have you been playing?
Mostly Ark Raiders. I've been playing a lot of that. It's really weird because I had that story last week where that one person on Twitch was calling it, like, a perfect place for toxic people and a-holes. This is the least toxic fan base I've interacted with in all my years of being on the internet, and that's saying something. I mean, I've seen people, like, people not in the party just run up and res people. I had a guy yesterday I was playing, and there's, like, mini bosses that are always around. They aren't hard to take out solo, but it's a lot easier in a group, world event kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I chucked in a couple grenades to help, let them loot it up, then went to the extract point, and the guy jumped on the mic and said, "Hey, I got an extra one of these that I don't need if you want it." And it was like a epic rare, component that you need in the game. It was like, "Well, yeah, if you don't need it." And the dude just dropped it and let me take it.
Nice. That's pretty cool. How are you finding the game, though? Good?
I mean, there are issues, but they're all on a technical level. The draw-in distance is a little goofy. I'm out dying a lot more to desync, which is starting to get frustrating. Desync is where, especially in a game like this where there's no, like, hug-the-wall cover, pop-over kind of a thing. You basically have to find a place with walls, shoot, hide behind the walls, jump out, shoot, hide behind the walls. And then the desync is where you're behind the wall, but on the client side, the game doesn't think you're behind the wall. And the AI is Skynet level scary. And then you get shot through the wall.
Damn.
And it's not a hack or anything like that. It's just, it's technically a bug, but it's not people shooting you, it's the AI shooting you. And most of my deaths have been because of either that or me just being stupid and not paying attention. Because you really, really got to pay attention. Because you take a pot shot at a flying drone, but you don't see the four other drones, and then all five drones come after you. And that's what I mean by the AI being Skynet level scary. Is that one drone will immediately, do out like a broadcast, and any drone that's in range is coming after your ass.
Cool. Sounds pretty good so far. Anything else you've played?
I mean, a little bit of this and that. I've still got the three indie games, Super Fantasy Kingdom, Ball Pit, and Furthest Frontier. I'll hop in for like half hour quick session when I need a break from, dying from stupidity again. But those aren't really, like, I've been putting time in, not serious time into it.
Cool. For me, I started Dispatch. I've nearly finished it. I am, I'd say, about a quarter of the way through the final episode. So, obviously, I've experienced almost all of it. It's an interesting one because I remember the last time I described a game getting in the way of itself, which was Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And in case you missed that discussion, of course, I did review the game, so I talked about it there. And this game doesn't do the same thing that game does, by the way. I'm just bringing that up as an example of the last time I felt that happened. Of course, one of the issues I had with VII Rebirth, particularly the last 5 hours or so, is the way the level design was sort of structured. I'm not going to get into all that again here. Again, if you want my thoughts on that, I did a 7 Rebirth review a few months ago. With Dispatch, so really, really like the cutscenes, really like the characters, really like the story, although it's much more character-driven than story or plot-driven. It's to do with, this main character called Robert, who's voiced by Aaron Paul. and he's the sort of leader of this dispatch team, or leader of this superhero team that's run by like a dispatch service, which he's the one that does that. There's a few other characters involved in different ways as well. Very, very interesting. All the characters, I really like them. There's a few that I like don't care about as much, but they've all got their own like place in the story and all that sort of thing. Love watching the cutscenes, making the choices and stuff like that. There's a few little QuickTime events. Those don't come up too often, but those are sort of in there as well. You often have, like, obviously your big choices. You do this or you do that. The sort of fight or flight instinct, which you can pause if you want to in those sorts of moments. I don't actually like the dispatch gameplay sections, and I'm finding my, because I genuinely only have one issue with this game, which, again, try to be balanced, try to be fair, because in terms of like the dialogue, story, characters, where it's all going, excellent work, absolutely excellent work. Of course, voice acting's top notch. I made sure in the audio as well that I cranked the voice acting up, because you don't really need like the noises in the game per se. It's not like you're sort of, you know, listening for enemies or anything else like that. So I cranked the voice acting up, tried to, you know, fiddle around with some settings, make sure that was singing, let's say, more than the rest of the game. Because, of course, you know, when you've got that level of voice talent, you want to kind of make the most of it, which is something that stands out here a lot. But I found it to become frustrating when, like, getting to a really good flow with the story, making some choices, moving things along at a really good pace. Like, the pacing in this game is really, really good. When it's in the cutscenes, when it's in the moments, it doesn't wait around for too long. The sort of editing, pace, flow, structure, whatever words you want to use for all that, really, really good. Really, really good stuff. But then it comes to the, and I get why it's in the game. I'm not like sort of, oh, why did you put this in the game sort of thing. That's not the angle that I'm taking. I'm finding that to be a pacing issue in a way of, okay, you've got superheroes, so it's a case of like, hey, this thing's come up, it needs this, like it needs a flying enemy or a strong enemy or whatever, and then you pick from your team and you do that. I get why it's in the game, but it's also kind of, I find just like a little bit of a disconnect between when you go into that. Of course, you go into like a completely different menu, you see what Robert can see on the screen and all that, and then you finish your dispatch stuff. Usually the sections are about 10 minutes, I would say, maybe. And you usually have about one per episode, and the episodes I'm finding between about 40 minutes to an hour, roughly. So, again, goes along at a very brisk pace. I'm not complaining about that at all. And by the way, the hacking mini game that you can do, again, I know it's supposed to be this thing of Robert's a techie computer guy and he can sort out the hacking and stuff. Again, it's not broken, it's not a problem, it works and all that. I just don't, it's not one of my favorite parts of the game, let's say. So I think weirdly the actual two gameplay parts, other than, you know, selecting dialogue options and the odd little sort of quick time event, I actually guess oddly don't like the actual gameplay sections. Again, the design of them, nothing wrong with the design of them or anything else like that. It's just the way the game paces itself with that. But then once you get out of the computer and away from the dispatch stuff, the game just like continues this really great flow with these really great characters, and just the game starts kind of singing again. And I think there was an episode, maybe it was like 3 or 4, where there was like a couple of longer dispatch sections, and I was like, okay, this is kind of like there, I suppose. I don't know what score I'm going to give it yet, but when I finish it, I should have this game finished on Thursday and might be able to review it on Thursday as well, because I've already got kind of my thoughts and spoiler thoughts in order. Of course, I've got to finish the rest of episode 8. I don't know what happens in the rest of the episode. But yeah, curious to kind of get into that. So I'll probably have that done by next podcast, and I'll have a nice little social media review. But yeah, characters are great, voice acting's great, the pacing's great outside of the dispatch stuff. The dialogue options and the actual choices are really interesting. Sometimes you've got to pick between a character or another character. Sometimes you've got to pick certain relationships with certain characters, or relationships not with other people. And there's some interesting kind of like mechanics that come out of that, so that's really great as well. Also, just again, I know I've said this loads of times before, when it comes to superhero stuff, or I guess comic book stuff, to me it doesn't always have to be Marvel and DC. There can be, you know, I enjoy all that kind of thing, and almost prefer at times if it's not Marvel and DC, because then it just has more like different things to it, I suppose. I still love Marvel and DC stuff and that, but it's just refreshing when you get something that's original, that's got nothing to do with Marvel or DC. So yeah, I like it a lot so far. I'm just kind of, it's sort of, okay, I'm going to obviously form a more full opinion when I hit the, you know, see the credits of the final episode, and then I can actually judge if I, you know, enjoyed the ending and where it all is going and that. So very, very good so far. And it's nice for a change, because this doesn't happen as often as you might think, but when you go to a project, whether it's a show, game, or film, and one of the big adverts for it is like, we got this person, this person, this person, this person, this person, and it does the thing of like, name, 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 you know, in the trailer, it's like, hey, we got these 10 really talented people. Like, okay, that's really great, that's really cool, but are you going to give them something interesting to do, something useful to do? Are you going to get them to stretch their legs, or in this case, voices? And this is the first one for a bit of time, actually, that kind of, okay, you know, you've got Aaron Paul in here, you've got a little bit of Ashley Johnson, I think, you've got Laura Bailey in here, you've got Jeffrey Wright, you've got, again, not known as much for voice acting, but like Charlie, Most Critical, you've got Jacksepticeye, who's really good, you've got Alana Pierce, who's really good as well, because you've got your big kind of TV people, which is basically Aaron Paul and Jeffrey Wright, and they all get given brilliant material, really, really good material, and it's nice to see that. I suppose maybe with this, because you are so dialogue and cutscene focused, and you have, okay, some gameplay sections and that, but, and even in those, there's the voice acting in those, because Robert's talking to the team, they're talking back to him, they're talking to each other, so there's still voice acting in all of that, which is really great as well. So, oh yeah, Matt Mercer's another name that's in there that I just remembered as well. So,
well, don't forget Travis Willingham.
Yeah, that one too. Yeah, again, so many great names, you might forget one or two. So, but yeah, I probably 60% of the dialogue in the game is Aaron Paul, because he is, you know, the main character. He's the one that you're following for the most part. But then he's obviously in scenes with other people and all that sort of thing. So, of course, love Aaron Paul. We're currently covering Breaking Bad. Obviously, he plays Jesse in that. He's been in Westworld for a bit and a bunch of other stuff as well. So, what do you think, I guess, of my thoughts on Dispatch and what you've seen of the game so far?
Yeah, it's fairly accurate. A content creator I follow has been doing the episodes. I knew that I kind of wanted to see it, but I also knew that I wasn't really interested in playing it for that exact reason of it's very hands-off gameplay-wise. I mean, the only real gameplay you do outside of the occasional hacking thing is just setting up the superhero mini teams. And really half of that is just who's rested and who's not busy or, you know, injured or something else.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
and so I knew the gameplay wasn't going to get me in, but it was the story. And so I just as soon watch somebody play the story, and it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, definitely worth, if you like a good story, good dialogue, a good back and forth, especially good smack talking back and forth, absolutely worth a playthrough.
Oh yeah, definitely. I haven't decided what rating I'm gonna give it yet, because I don't know how the season ends. Maybe something stupid happens at the end and I give it a hard skip. I'm joking, probably not gonna give it a hard skip, unless something like really, really stupid happened, then maybe. But and also, if you want to see excuse me, if you like Laura Bailey, who of course I do, Abby from Last of Us 2, if you like her and you like Aaron Paul, then it might be worth playing it just for that, because there's a ton of both of them in this game. So she voices a character called Invisigal or something like that. I can't pronounce the name. Invisigal, I think, is her name. And he plays Robert, who's the main character. So I was also going to try to dip into, I think it's called Lighthouse, the new Double Fine game, which has not had much promotion. I have signed up to Game Pass. and got that downloaded, ready to go. Might be able to start that Friday or something. So I should have, like, you know, full kind of roundup review stuff, social media review for Dispatch next week, and then hopefully some impressions. I don't know how long Lighthouse is either, so hopefully some impressions of that next week as well. Alright, cool, so all the stuff we've been playing. Let's get into some housekeeping, and we'll see if that in a minute. Hi there, if you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link, which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system, which is usually in the bottom right hand corner, to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps, and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. Alright, recently on Entertainment Talk, just to start off with a tease this week, which is something that hasn't come out yet. Just a couple of things to remember is November 22nd, 2 podcasts, 2 p.m. and 2:30 p.m. Why 2 p.m. and 2:30 p.m? Just the times that I chose. But this Saturday, 22nd November, 2 podcasts, 2 p.m. and 2:30 p.m. That's GMT, UK time, whatever, so adjust that to your time zone. I'm not going to say what it's for, that will just drop on the site, drop in your podcast feed. Of course, if you subscribe to us on, just sub to our main podcast feed, and you'll get everything. And those episodes, I'm not saying like, hey, if you look at your phone at exactly 2 p.m, it will drop right there in that moment. It, you know, can sometimes take a little bit of time, but just look out for 2 new episodes around those times of day on Saturday, 22nd of November. Very, very, very much enjoyed recording those 2 episodes, which I did on Sunday. So look out for those. Speaking of updates, posted a bit of a review for Classic Review. Sorry, a bit of a update podcast called Classic Reviews Update, talking about what's going on with that season this year for 2025. Over on Becoming Heisenberg for Breaking Bad, we covered season 4, episode 10. We're going to be covering season 4, episode 11. We've got 3 left, which is 11, 12, and 13 for season 4. And again, if you like Aaron Paul, of course he plays Jesse in that show. So it's worth watching Breaking Bad just because it's Breaking Bad anyway. But that's that for that. So we'll be covering season 4, episode 11 tomorrow. And be swiftly moving into the season finale in the next couple of weeks. Over on Gaming Talk last week, of course, we talked about Grand Theft Auto 6 getting delayed to the 19th of November 2026. Not it's actually 19th of November today. It's not coming out today. Exactly a year from now, GTA 6 has been delayed to... we had a couple of Marvel bits and pieces to talk about. Their work with Insomniac is going to be continuing, which I think is a surprise to nobody. And also talking about Marvel's, what's it called, Rise of Hydra 1943, I believe, been delayed a couple more months. And we also did predictions, which we'll be getting to the actual nominations here in a bit. Our actual 6 predictions for the actual Game Award nominees, which we'll be going over the nominees in a bit. Over on some TV season reviews, gave a possible skip review to Twisted Metal Season 2. You can watch that on Peacock or Paramount Plus, depending on where you live and which service it's on. Some more Breaking Bad stuff, gaming talks. Must-see review for Invasion Season 3. You can check that one out. And that's what we've been doing recently on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. Also worth noting that Premier League football is back this weekend. Of course, we've had another international break because that's what they decided to do. And we'll be playing on Monday, actually, at home to Everton. So we'll see how the hell that goes. We were going to move into some news in a second, but the Game Awards site has decided to mess up on me. But we'll get to that in a second, and we'll be back with some news in a minute. Alright, so let's move into the nominees for the Game Awards. We're not going to start at the top, which is Game of the Year. We'll save that for last. Of course, we're not going to look at every single category because we don't care about every single category because there's esports stuff and other things like that. The only one worthy of really noting Content Creator of the Year is Charlie himself, Most Critical. The others I hadn't heard of, so we can skip over that one. Let's go to Most Anticipated Game first. Alright, and we're back. So I've got a browser version on the laptop and one on my phone, so if one doesn't load, then I will try the other one. So just bear with us here for a minute. Anyway, Most Anticipated Game. We've got 007 First Light, Grand Theft Auto 6, surprise surprise, Marvel's Wolverine, Resident Evil Requiem, and The Witcher 4, I think that is, yes. GTA 6 is obviously the biggest thing in the world right now, kind of. So I wouldn't be surprised if that one. I would like to see. Okay, so which one am I most excited for, I suppose? Least excited, I'm probably not going to play Resident Evil Requiem because I have a bad relationship with Resident Evil or something like that. All the others I'm going to play. I'm going to play Witcher 4, Wolverine, GTA, and the James Bond game as well because I like the look of that. I wouldn't mind if either of the other three won, to be honest. I think which is the least popular, because you've got James Bond, you've got Grand Theft Auto, you've got Resident Evil, Marvel, and then The Witcher. I guess The Witcher is technically the smaller IP here. It's the one that's the least sort of franchised out of all them. Yeah, I wouldn't mind any of the other three. It would just be a bit kind of... I wonder with this if, if you have this list and you go, okay, GTA is just going to win it anyway, so let's not put it in. That would, I guess, be a bit strange in a way. But I would like to see, James Bond win this, I think. But I don't mind any of those three. What do you want to win? What do you think is going to win?
What I would like to win is, James Bond, obviously. Mm-hmm. What I think is going to win is GTA 6. But I think any one of them would be perfectly fine winning because I can see an argument, a very good argument for all five of those games.
Yeah. As we know, GTA is the popular one there. All right, let's go to, there's one simple, very simple answer for me in this one, obviously. Let me just load both versions of this. It's actually working much better. Best Adaption. Now, I wasn't sure what they were going to do because I can't remember what they did with sequels and second seasons of things. Anyway, we got Minecraft Movie, Devil May Cry, which is the newest Netflix version, Splinter Cell Death Watch, which I haven't got around to, The Last of Us Season 2, and Until Dawn. Two of these should be deleted from this list, which should be the Minecraft film and Until Dawn, because it's not actually about Until Dawn, because the plot is changed, and I don't think it actually has the characters from the games, so it's just Until Dawn in name. I know there's been, when certain things get nominated for certain stuff, and certain people react a certain way. I don't think I've ever looked at a nomination and thought you're just in here because of your name when it comes to Minecraft, because I was never going to see that film and whatever, but almost unanimously everybody that saw that film was like, yeah, it's just stupid and it's just whatever. And you know, if you want to watch, I guess, Jack Black and Jason Momoa do some funny kids film, it's there for that. But I didn't remember hearing too many glowing things come out of it. Obviously, my answer here is Last of Us Season 2. Until Dawn is there as well. I'm curious as to how good Splinter Cell Deathwatch is, because I do care about Splinter Cell. And it's good that we finally get something from it. We'll be bringing up Splinter Cell in the show in a little bit. And Devil May Cry to me is like a just... It's just this harmless little series that just sits there. It's not one I'm ever going to really be interested in. It's not my... just not my kind of thing. It's never clicked with me, but I know people really love those games and all that sort of stuff. But it's just very neutral to me, Devil May Cry. I mean, yeah, if Minecraft or Until Dawn beats like Last of Us here, I don't know. It would be obviously whichever of the other four it would be, if one of those four wins, obviously I'd be disappointed anyway, because I want Last of Us Season 2 to win this. But at least if Devil May Cry or Splinter Cell wins, it won't be one of the other two that shouldn't be there. The interesting part about this as well, I remember last year Knuckles got nominated, which is genuinely one of the worst TV shows I've ever seen. Might sound hyperbolic, but I would say go and watch the show. No, don't go and watch the show, because I recommend that you don't spend time with it. It was just horrible and stupid and just a waste of time. And thinking of what happened in Sonic 3, I don't remember Knuckles actually contributing to Sonic 3, which, you know, that was the chronological order. Sonic 3 is not nominated here. It did come out, like, December, January. I think it was, like, a late Christmas, January film. It was, like, one of the first films I saw this year. I remember that. So, yeah, I would easily put that in and take Until Dawn or Minecraft out. Too early, obviously, for Fallout. That's going to be in December. That'll be obviously after this show has even happened. Anyway, what's your thoughts on these nominees here?
I'd say throw them all away and put up Fallout Season 1. That's the only real good adaptation.
Right, but that wouldn't be eligible because that was that last year?
The year before? Well, came out about the same time as... It came out like in December, so it came out after the nominees came up.
Was it not a 2023 show? Or was it 2024?
Oh, you're right. It might have been 2023.
Yeah, because I think it was nominated, but I think it was the awards before the last one. So.
Yeah, but all of those are terrible. I mean, even Last of Us Season 2, they had so many fans pissed off of all the changes they made to it. I never got around to seeing it, but then again, I never played the second game either, so.
Let's take a little look at best multiplayer, because I can't remember what's actually in there, if it wants to. There we go. Now, I'm looking at, so best multiplayer, there's also best ongoing game. Did Call of Duty get nominated for anything? Whether it was Warzone...
I think it came out too late. It came out, like, last week.
No, I mean, like, because, you know, they have, like, ongoing game and they put, like, Warzone and Fortnite and stuff. I don't remember it popping up in anything. Because you've got... I guess last year's game would be too late. Black Ops 7, not that Black Ops 7 should be nominated for anything. But you also do have Warzone. Because, like, when you have, you know, like, your Elder Scrolls Online and things like that, that usually gets in ongoing game, and Warzone's ongoing. But anyway, no COD here in multiplayer. You've got Ark Raiders, Battlefield 6, Elden Ring, Night Rain, Peak, and Split Fiction. I'm not sure if Split Fiction should actually kind of count in here.
It requires two players, so...
Yeah, I guess it is multiplayer in a certain way. Just because it had a bit of a better comeback, I wouldn't mind Battlefield 6 or Ark Raiders. Of course, that's got some good buzz around it. Peak, I don't actually know what that is.
Peak is a first person a game where you only see your gloves and you got other people around you that are on your friends list. So it's not a player versus player game, and you just got to climb to the top of the mountain. And so you have stamina checks and you forage for food to get more stamina, and most likely you fall to your death. It's very Among Us in a streamer sense, in that you're playing with your streamer buddies and you're all just falling around laughing, having a good time.
Nice. Which one would you like to win? Arc Raiders?
Mean, obviously, personally, Arc Raiders, I think, has the best reason to win. Just from concurrent players alone, they set a new record. They actually got up to 481,000 concurrent. So for 2 weeks straight, the max player count's actually gone up every single time. It is not falling off at all. Peak, I'd be happy with it. It's a very family friendly game outside of falling to your death. Split Fiction, I could kind of see that as getting a win because all the other categories it would be going for would actually get crushed by Expedition 33. So, like, best narrative, best story, best music, best characters, anything like that, it wouldn't stand a chance.
Let's move on to. I'm going to do this category because I like one thing that's in it. Best esports slash racing game. You've got FIFA, F1, Mario Kart World, Sonic Racing Cross World, and Rematch, which I really liked when I played it. I haven't quite gone back to it yet because I haven't actually decided what platform I want to get it on, and I don't want to buy it twice on Xbox and on PlayStation. But it was a fresh game. Obviously the shooter genre and the FIFA or football genre have been dying and crying out for any sense of competition because Konami sort of gave up when it came to PES, even though that used to be good competition. And while Rematch isn't, the same sports simulation sort of thing. That you get in that sense. So this is the third person like football game. It's like a 4v4. I think you can do 3v3 football game. And it was really, really good. I really liked the mechanics of it. It was very kind of intense and you sort of play your own role and all that. Being a goalkeeper was like really, really good as well. There were some really good mechanics towards that. I quite enjoyed doing that. So I can see probably Mario Kart or FIFA winning this, although the FIFA community's been raging for. See, the FIFA community's been raging for about 5 years, but still buys the game every year. So that's your own fault, and gives EA, billions every year through cards and or is it cards, packs, whatever, Ultimate Team stuff, and then continues just buying the game every year. So just for something fresh and different, I'd love to see Rematch win it. Plus, I did really actually enjoy that game, Mario Kart. I don't know how different that one is. F1, I don't know how different that one is, and you got Sonic Racing as well. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, and they're not games that I play, so I really don't care who wins or loses it, but
What's the next best one to go to? We've got Sim Strategy. So we might skip that one. I th see. Where the issue comes in for me is like, okay, best action game, then best action adventure game, then best RPG, and it's sort of okay, now you're just making loads of different categories for the same thing. I think I'll skip. Let's look at best fighting game. That might be the next best one to look at because they got family game, but that's always similar stuff. You got 2X KO, Capcom Fighting Collection, Virtua Fighter 5, Revo World Stage, that's a long name, Mortal Kombat Legacy. Fatal Fury, City of the Wolves. I thought there was some different stuff in there. I don't really have any thoughts on that one. I don't know if you do.
Nope, not really.
Let's pick one of these next three to look at because I don't want to look at all three of them. Action adventure, RPG. Although I think Expedition 33 is in all three of them, so that should just win all three of them, I guess. Let's just go for the middle one, best action adventure, so we don't end up reading the same stuff from the same categories. So, best action adventure, you got Death Stranding 2, Ghost of Yotei, Hollow Knight, Silk Song, Indiana Jones and the Great Circle, and Split Fiction. I would like to see Ghost of Yotei win this. Death Stranding 2, I was not impressed with. Indiana Jones, I was not impressed with. Split Fiction's okay, and I guess it would be harmless to me if Hollow Knight Silk Song won it. I know a lot of people have been loving that. But yeah, just, I don't know, my disappointment of Death Stranding 2 still lingers. It's still fresh in the mind. So what would you like to see?
I'd like to see Silk Song mm-hmm. win this one.
Yeah, yeah. Again, either that or Ghost of Yotei for me. I don't particularly mind. Let's go to best VR AR game. God, I haven't played a VR game in a while, and it's starting to annoy me because I really do love VR stuff. But you know, I'm not spending half a grand on a headset system. I got Alien Rogue Incursion, Arkham Age, Ghost Town, Marvel's Deadpool VR, and The Midnight Walk, which had like a certain art style to it. Have seen some of Alien Rogue Incursion, really like that. Deadpool VR looks quite fun. The other two I'm not as familiar with. A Midnight Walk looked interesting. Just purely out of being different and interesting and fresh. I guess if Midnight Walk won, that would be quite good. But I wouldn't really mind if either any of these win, really. But again, just for something fresh and different and new, which is what people ask for, Midnight Walk kind of stands out there. How about you?
Deadpool, just for the laughs.
Yeah, yeah. Best mobile game, I don't care. Best debut indie game, which was that can go to Expedition. Best independent game, where was... Oh, it's in another category. Best community support, that's fine. Best ongoing, I can't remember what was actually in here, but this was the category I was referring to. This is when you usually have your, your ongoing games. You've got Final Fantasy XIV Online, Fortnite, mm-hmm. Fortnite Helldivers 2, Marvel Rivals, and No Man's Sky. I would like either Marvel Rivals, which I need to get back to, or Helldivers 2 to win this, because those have been very, very good. Fortnite's just become an IP, because they just added The Simpsons, didn't they? Not sure what the occasion was, but they added The Simpsons. Because it's been the same game for years. It hasn't really innovated, per se, and it's just sort of, hey, here's our next bunch of IP characters that you can collect. I'm sure I hear a lot of good stuff about Final Fantasy XIV and No Man's Sky. But, been impressed with, out of the, 17 games that Sony tried to do as live service games, that's like the only one that's worked so far. So, and Marvel Rivals is actually a good idea for a hero shooter, because they have, you know, characters, a bunch of them. What would you like here?
Well, I did want to bring this up during this part of it. For the best debut indie game,
yeah,
the developer for Megabonk actually withdrew that nomination, citing the fact that he developed games under a different studio, so he doesn't consider it a debut game, and so he actually pulled his nomination.
Hmm. Okay. Interesting. But again, for debut and indie game, I think Expedition's in both of those, so... Mm-hmm. I did best ongoing game. Games Impact. Let's have a look at that. Oh yes, this is where it pops up. Games for Impact. You've got Costume Me, Despelito, Lost Records, Bloom and Rage, South of Midnight, and Wonderstop. Just because I love the game so much, and because it's not in any other categories apart from one other one, I would like South of Midnight to win, because I love that game. I knew it wouldn't be nominated for Game of the Year. But yeah, I would like to see that win. How about you?
I'm fine with it winning. None of the games are really any that I've played would have played, so.
Yeah. Innovation in accessibility. I have a particular problem with something in this list, but we'll get to it in a second. Actually, I have two problems with this list. Innovation for accessibility. Just want to read out specifically what this is, because some people are a little bit lost on it. I recognize in software and or hardware that it's pushing the medium forward by adding features, technology, and content to help be played and enjoyed by an even wider audience. So keep that in mind. Assassin's Creed Shadows, if you'd get me to guess at the start of the year that would be nominated for anything, I would have been curious. Atomfall, Doom the Dark Ages, FIFA 26, and South of Midnight. Again, I'd like South of Midnight to win. I don't remember looking at the accessibility options for that, apart from, you know, subtitles and stuff. Assassin's Creed, I played about an hour of that game and just got bored slash fed up slash disappointed slash a lot of things. Just because of what they've thrown away from the past and just, yeah, all of the noise surrounding that game. Okay, now I haven't seen the specific options for accessibility in FIFA 26. However, because I play these games usually with my dad, and I like to look at sort of, because there's a bunch of different settings in this game. Now, I'm only going to specifically count the ones that are actually in accessibility options, because all the other ones are like, you know, how you change your player and stuff. That's not what I would count for that. Those are just normal gameplay mechanics, like, do you want your shots to be assisted or manual? Those are, that's just normal settings for this game. Or like, adjusting, because you can adjust like your speed, your shot error, things like that. I'm not going to count those. I'm going to count the things that are actually in accessibility options. Again, not seeing the specifics for that one, so forgive me if they've like added 15 new things or whatever. The accessibility for FIFA games in the last 5 to 10 years have been absolutely piss poor, and I've looked at them in a couple of occasions. Just say, like, you know, if me and my dad are struggling with certain, you know, we're in a bad patch of form or whatever, I'll look at different settings and be like, okay, what's on there, what's not. And FIFA's also got a terrible habit of not actually saving your settings, so I'm going to give the game a big knock for that, because I don't imagine that that's fixed. Like, the amount of times, because I sign me in, I load the game, sign my dad in, and you have to do that in a certain way, otherwise the game gets confused and thinks that my controller is controller 2, and then it just messes everything up. Anyway, and I'll have things like, because we play this game in a certain way, but I like to have certain different settings. And the amount of times where, like, his player, because you can have it on, like, air balls, manual, automatic, different ones, and he'll go, like, oh, the player's changing and I didn't do it. And I'm like, oh, great, the game didn't load the correct setting again, didn't save the setting again. So, yeah, even for, forget, like, accessibility stuff, even for just remembering, because sometimes the game even forgets my controls, like, I didn't realize for ages I didn't have it on switching on air balls. It was on manual or something. And so, yeah. So yeah, I'm not happy about that nomination. Let's just say that. I hope that South of Midnight wins, because it's the best game in this list anyway. And I think there was also some good accessibility options. What would you like to see from that?
Honestly, I don't play any of these games. I think Assassin's Creed made it on there just so they could say it got nominated for something. But yeah, the real thing is that most of those games came and went and nobody forgot, nobody remembered them.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it took me a good 5 minutes to remember what Atomfall was.
Right. Yeah, the game based in ugly-looking London. And I can say that as somebody who lives in London, and we don't have a good-looking city. Anyway, like, tourists, why do you come over here? I don't understand.
Because it's London.
Right, yeah. What, to look at Buckingham Palace, which it was full of snobby people? Anyway, let's move on to a good category. Best performance. We've got Ben Starr in Expedition 33, Charlie Cox, Expedition 33, Erika Ishii, I think, for Ghost of Yote, Jennifer English for Expedition 33, Konatsu Kato for Silent Hill F, and Troy Baker for Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. Okay, I'll just get this one out the way for a second. Love Troy Baker, love him as Joel, obviously spent a lot of time with that character, a lot of time with him as that character, him talking about that character. I don't think, when I saw that, I was like, oh, really? And granted, okay, you know, you don't want to fill this list up with Expedition 33 people, I suppose. There's already three of them in there. There's probably one or two more you could have chosen. It fit that one feels like a sort of, and he does an all right job as Indy. He's not really given his, you know, legs to stretch in that role per se, because there's not a lot of leg stretching of any kind really in that game is a bit basic. I doubt it's going to be the Silent Hill F person or Troy Baker. It's probably going to be one of these Expedition 33 people. The only other thing I can see happening here is the community on Expedition 33 disagrees on who to vote for. The vote gets split. Let's say, 20% to one, 10% to one, 10% to the other, or whatever. And then Erica takes this for Ghost of Yote, because if the Ghost of Yote community would, or I guess Ghost of Tsushima as well community, would have one person to vote for, because that's just sometimes what can happen with voting. It's like, oh, this thing that really stands out, but that's got three nominations as opposed to one, which is less likely to win, but then votes get split, so therefore it gets less. I'd personally like to see Jennifer English. I think she really, really stood out as Mael. Charlie Cox did a great job as well, so did Ben Starr. But Mael and SGA, I think, are the best two characters in that game. And again, you could have, if you could put any more Expedition 33 people in, obviously there's people like Andy Serkis in that, in this game, among other people as well. But I think this will either go to Jennifer English if that community decides on who to vote for. And if not, I think it goes to Erica here, because, yeah, so anyway. And when it came to opinions that I saw on Silent Hill F, which were a bit mixed anyway, I didn't hear sort of, oh, the voice acting's really good in this game. I heard a lot of more conversation about how good the jump scares are and the puzzles and the movement and that sort of thing. Anyway, what do you think could happen here? What do you want to happen here?
Well, you got to remember, the voting is 90%. The industry insiders, only 10% fan base. So the fan base being split between the three Expedition 33 characters doesn't mean shit. I would love Charlie Cox to win it, just because it's not, the same three people every single year. I mean, if you look at the history of the Game Awards, I guarantee you Troy Baker's been in best performance at least five times. Mm-hmm. I got a bad feeling that Erika Ishii will win, and that's strictly because of politics, because that's what's driven so much of that crap lately.
Mm.
But like I said, I'd love for Charlie Cox to win it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just now wondering what the other five Troy nominations would be. Joel Philosophers 1, Joel Philosophers 2. Uncharted 4? With Sam, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
That was in 2017 and 2016 as well. And probably a bunch of other people that he's played. Let's move on to best audio design, one of which I completely fundamentally disagree with, but let's read them out. Battlefield 6, Claire Obscure, Expedition 33, Death Stranding 2 on the Beach, Ghost of Yote, and Silent Hill F. Which is weird, because I didn't hear a lot of good audio stuff about Silent Hill F. Expedition 33 should take this. I didn't really notice, great. And again, I didn't get very far in Death Stranding 2, but I did play it for 25 hours, so I heard a lot of audio. And the audio design wasn't really something that stood out, apart from, your standard rain sounds, but lots of games have got really good rain sounds in them. Battlefield 6 audio is very, very good, but again, I just think Expedition 33 here should probably take this. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, audio design, I can kind of see a Battlefield 6 in terms of the environmental sounds.
Oh, yeah.
Like the rubble and the gunfire and whatnot. I can also kind of see Silent Hill F because of you need the audio background to set the stage for...
Yeah,
you know, the jump scares and ambiance and all that stuff. So I could see either one of those two winning it. But if you're talking just pure music, it's got to be Expedition 33.
Yep. Speaking of best score and music, we've got Hollow Knight, Silk Song, Hades 2, Expedition 33, Ghost of Yote, Death Stranding 2. Death Stranding 2 has got some decent music. And it does fit the sort of quiet, lonely, world that you're in. But if we're talking... Music. There's a bunch of music in Expedition 33 that just kicks ass, absolutely kicks ass. I've got like 6 or 7 songs purchased on my phone that I they're all in a like kind of playlist as well, which is cool. I listen to those songs regularly because they're just that good. Plus, like the variety of music that fits in different levels, and it's just fantastic. So, I can't necessarily see anything else winning for this. How good is the music in Hollow Knight?
It's very atmospheric, but it's very background.
Okay. So, Expedition 33 for you?
Yeah.
Cool. Don't know that we need to do. Let's just do the rest of these. We have 4 left. So, best art direction, so visual stuff. Expedition 33, Death Stranding 2, Ghost of Yota, Hades 2, Hollow Knight, Silksong. Given that apart from Last of Us 2, given that Expedition 33 is the only game I've ever stopped and looked around in, because there's a lot of environmental storytelling which I paid attention to, of like, hey, what's that thing over there? What's that? Especially in, you know, the underwater level and all that. So, clear winner there for me. Again, Death Stranding 2 interesting on that front because the world is so bare bones. But if you, I know people that like that kind of, again, quiet, lonely thing to it. Whereas Expedition 33 is a bit different. And the other 3 I've not played. Hollow Knight does look interesting for that kind of stuff. Hades 2's got an interesting art style. And Ghost of Yota is Ghost of Yota. But yeah, Expedition 33 is another winner for me here. How about you?
Same.
Yeah, indeed. Best narrative. If it will load, it should. For outstanding storytelling and narrative development in a game, we've got Expedition 33, Death Stranding 2, Ghost of Yota, Kingdom Come Deliverance 2, and Silent Hill F. Yeah, Expedition. I can see Expedition 33 just sweeping a lot of these awards. And again, when it came to the narrative, which I did see further than what I got in the game, because I started watching the YouTube cutscenes, I just had issues with Death Stranding 2's overall purpose, I suppose. I don't know where the narrative goes in Ghost of Yota, Kingdom Come, or in Silent Hill F. So it's got to be Expedition again. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be mad if... hang on, it just refreshed on me 1 second.
Kingdom Come?
Yeah, Kingdom Come 2. I wouldn't be mad if that won, because it is a very story-driven game, despite all the action in it. But I think Expedition 33 is a clear leader.
Best Game Direction, awarded for outstanding creative vision and innovation in game direction and design. We've got Expedition 33, Death Stranding 2, Ghost of Yota, Hades 2, and Split Fiction. I think this goes to Expedition 33. They may as well just put Sandfall on the stage and like, hey, see these 6 different things that you've won? Just collect them all in one go. Yeah, that's what I would go with. How about you?
The only game direction I saw Ghost of Yota was pissing off the fan base. Yeah. So I'm not quite sure if that's something you should award. Mm. Split Fiction, I'd be fine with it because it was such a unique game in the sense that that studio is the only one that does dual co-op games like that.
Or all at the moment, really. Like,
yeah, I mean, nobody does it like them at all.
Lego games, I suppose. But
well, even the Lego games don't really count.
Mm. Yeah, they don't have a narrative like that, I suppose. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, finishing off Game of the Year, recognizing a game that delivers the absolute best experience across all creative and technical fields. Expedition 33, Don't Take a Shot every time I say that in this podcast. Death Stranding 2, Don't Take a Shot when I say that name either. Donkey Kong Bonanza, Hades 2, Hollow Knight Silksong, and Kingdom Come Deliverance 2. Again, there's one clear winner to me, which is Expedition 33. I guess we can. This is where we can somewhat revisit our predictions. So I predicted 3, 4 of these because I said Expedition 33, Death Stranding 2. I think I said Hollow Knight, yeah, because I asked you if that was like a DLC thing or whatever, and you said no, it's a full game. So I said that. And I know I kind of cheated with one of my answers. I said like a Nintendo game because I always get put in here, so that sort of counts. What was the other two? I think I said Ghost and Split Fiction, so that's substituted here for, well, not substituted. Difference there is Kingdom Come 2 and Hades 2, which I had on my mind, but those are the only two I got wrong. I think you might have been closer to me with your prediction because I think you said KCD2 and I didn't. And I can't remember if you said Death Stranding 2 actually, but I think you said
Yeah, I
Hades
said it
2.
would be because Jeff Keighley's in love with Kojima, and anytime Kojima has a game, it basically auto wins.
Did you say Hades 2? I think you did.
I did not, but I did say Hollow Knight, Silksong, KCD 2, Death Stranding 2, and Expedition 33.
Okay. All right, there is your nominees. How do you feel about all that kind of overall, apart from just Expedition dominating, which it should, because it's quite clearly the best game of the year. But it's nice to have some, like the South of Midnight was in some stuff. Rematch was in a thing. So that was nice as well. But I don't know. This year's just been there's just. And granted, I've not even played Ghost of Yota yet, so I don't know what I'll think about that game. I've not finished Dispatch yet. I think that was in, by the way, one of the indie or debut game. I think that was in one of them too, which we didn't read out, but that got nominated there. Again, there's some. If you want to talk about mixing up the voice at the performance stuff, you could have put like, I guess a Laura Bailey or an Aaron Paul in there, because those are kind of two standouts from that game. But anyway, how do you feel about these overall?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, I'm fine with it. I think it's very well known of my dislike for Ghost of Yote for all the shit they did. But I also knew it was going to get nominated up there because of all the shit they did. That's why they're in there.
The only other one again to me was obviously New Last of Us was possibly there. I just couldn't remember if they nominated sequels in second season. So I was like, okay, they'll probably have some of the stuff in there. I just didn't know if I couldn't remember if they sort of oh yeah, because they got nominated for season one, so it's not eligible. I just couldn't remember if they did that, but that was nice to see that there as well. So yeah, there we go. That's your Game Awards. I think it's December 11th or something at
About in that time frame,
yeah
yeah.
at 4:30 Pacific, but then that's the pre-show. So all right, let's save some power here, close that browser, I don't need it anymore, and move on to we do still have other news to get to as well. I can kind of mention these stories a bit and sort of not really rush through them, but sort of there's two games announced this week, one of which was a Ratchet and Clank game and one of which was a Horizon game. And some of you might be thinking, blimey, those are, big things to just kind of be announced. They're both mobile games, neither of them are on PS5, and they're both on mobile and PC, but both have been specifically more designed for mobile and PC. I didn't get round to seeing any of the Horizon footage. I couldn't quite actually find any. But I did see the little trailer for Ratchet and Clank. Now, look, I love Ratchet and Clank. I've loved it since I was young, since the PS2 days. It was kind of my action platformer. Was very, very glad when it came back with Rift Apart. I was glad when they did the remake of the first game on PS4. That was great. I didn't finish watching the trailer for this. I just looked at it and I was like, look, I love you too, Ratchet and Clank. I love you both. Been in my life since the PS2 era, which is great. Did have a period of time when there wasn't a Ratchet game for a while. It's just not something I need or want or whatever in my life. Like, it's just, I looked at it and I was like, cool, let's just release this thing, do what you're gonna do with it, move on, and then just let me know when a PS5 one is gonna come out. Now, I saw, obviously, the internet slash gaming world can get a bit freaked out very easily. It doesn't take a lot to do that. And I saw all this, hoopla and moaning and complaining and concern about, like, oh my god, a PlayStation game not coming out on the PS5. What's up with that? This, specifically the Ratchet game, doesn't look like it was really designed with PlayStation in mind. It very, very much looks like a specific mobile game. And yeah, again, I could play it. I do have a phone, obviously, we all do, whatever. I just don't need that, and it's I don't know if this is like leftovers from the Jim Ryan era of let's make multiplayer games, let's do some live service stuff, because again, we went through that list of 17 that time. And we've known that they're going to do more stuff, obviously, with Horizon for a while. But this just kind of feels like another filler thing of... And look, these two games could come out, do very, very well, and good if they do, because people worked on them and, you know, whatever. But, yeah, I'll just wait for a mainline Horizon or Ratchet game to be announced, and I will play those two. What do you think?
I don't really play many mobile games anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing against them, just not my wheelhouse.
Yeah, me too. But yeah, are they just going to come and go, or are they going to stick around? We'll have to wait and see.
They'll come and go, yeah. Probably.
We shall see. Cool, that's those covered. All right. Let's talk about Call of Duty. I almost couldn't say that without laughing. So... Call of Duty Black Ops 7 is out, and some of you may have been wondering, okay, have I had my eye on this game? Obviously, I've talked up, down, left, right, diagonal, backwards, forwards about Call of Duty for about 5 years, or no, 6 years, since Modern Warfare 2019 came out. Granted, I had no interest in this game, was not going to play it, I'm not up to date on the Black Ops lore, I've not played a Black Ops game since the second one. I still do remember there was the plotline about Mason and the numbers, and that was an interesting mystery to me, and then I just kind of drifted away from COD games, and that's basically what happened. Where's the screenshot I've actually got for this? No, that's on the Modern Warfare 4 thing. We'll talk about Modern Warfare 4 in a second. Where did I put it? It's to do with the fact that, there we go, this is from IGN, who did review the game, of course, as well. I don't remember what they gave it, but it was probably a 7. Call of Duty Black Ops 7's co-op-focused campaign is online only, which could cause some headaches for fans of the historically single-player mode. Says, Call of Duty Black Ops 7's campaign is online only, lacks checkpoints and pausing, and kicks you if you're idle for too long. So there's that one element. I've seen a chunk of footage of something in this game, whether you could call it a story, narrative, or anything. And I honestly think if you just showed me footage of it and said, Matt, what game do you think this is from? I'm not going to say Call of Duty. This looks like a sort of almost, at least from the footage that I saw, which included a lot of monsters and some like person who grows really, really big that you do a boss fight for. It looks like some sort of Stranger Things-esque crappy like spin-off, which has got nothing to do with COD. Now, here's where things get kind of interesting with this, is, again, people have been posting photos, making fun of this game. You make fun of this game all you want, you go for it. I'm right there with you, because it's worthy of being made fun of, because it looks ridiculous, and it looks stupid, and it looks just like a thing. It just looks like a bit of an afterthought. And I saw some photos of people posting, like, hey, here's what Call of Duty 2 or 3 or whatever from 2003 looked like, and it looked like, you know, a normal World War game where you're like storming a beach or something, and it had like, here's COD in 2003, here's COD in 2025 with this weird like monster futuristic gunplay thing. And there was a lot of comments about like, oh, look how far COD has fallen, and what will they do, and Battlefield's won this year, and which is good, by the way, that's happened, because Call of Duty needs, well, it needs more than a kick up the arse. It needs to be beaten up a bit. And I don't mean that in the violent way. I just mean that in a sort of like wake the hell up sort of way. What's interesting about that, though, is now I don't know how many of these comments come from like the hardcore community, the somewhat hardcore community, the casual community that just sort of like is aware of COD and sees bits and pieces of it every year. It's funny to me how a large selection of those people making fun of this game, and again, make fun of this game all you want because, to be honest, it looks like it deserves it, aren't aware that there's technically three different series of COD games, which is one of the reason that the three teams, Infinity Ward, Sledgehammer, and Treyarch, rotate every 3 years, or at least it used to be that way until it got mucked up in the last couple of years. And I don't know what the routine is now at this point, because one of the reasons that some of you are looking at, like, oh, what about this game from 2 years ago that looked different and this other one from 5 years ago that looked different, is probably because it's from a different series. Like, if you are going to look at an image of a Modern Warfare game and then look at an image of a Black Ops game, as much as, okay, the Black Ops games might look more silly or more futuristic or, like, have different plot lines and stuff, it's because they're actually supposed to look different. So it's actually this strange thing where, okay, you can look at the Modern Warfare games and go, oh, that's a military shooter. Yeah, because they've always looked like military shooters, because that's what Infinity Ward does with the Modern Warfare games. Whereas, like, there's some just different stuff in the Black Ops games. You've got, like, the Vanguard games, which is, like, the sort of other series. You've got, like, the World War II games and all that. But seemingly with Black Ops 6, and particularly with Black Ops 7, which is the last two that came out, the reason they do look so different to, like, oh, there's that Modern Warfare game from a couple of years ago, that looks really different to Black Ops 7. Yeah, again, it's because it's from different series with different characters and different time settings. But the problem they've come across there is, okay, Black Ops is supposed to look different to Modern Warfare, but it's not supposed to be like this, whatever this game even is. But yeah, it just like looks like someone took Call of Duty, said, what can we do this year that's different? Hey, Stranger Things is coming out for its final season. Let's make a monster-looking, Demogorgon-looking, but crappy Demogorgon-looking spin-off game with none of the Stranger Things characters. That's about the best I can describe that. This, I don't understand the online-only thing, the checkpoint. I don't know how the checkpoints work necessarily, and pausing, and then, like, because obviously if you're in an online game and you stand still for a couple of rounds, whatever, the game will kick you because you've been idle for too long. But that's not how the campaigns of these games are supposed to work. So as much as I'm looked at as the sort of like, hey, Matt, what's going on with COD this year kind of person, I'm starting to lose track of that. But I'll ask you in a minute what you think of this Black Ops 7 stuff, but before I do that, okay, what does Call of Duty, apart from releasing a game every year, which just take like 5 years off at this point, you need it, what does Call of Duty do next? Like, how does it sort of, you know, Battlefield 6 has come out and emerged, people are really, really enjoying it, and that's really great and everything. So what should Call of Duty do next? Where should it go? Well, there might be good news on that if this goes the way that it should, an emphasis on the word should and not will go. So as we've known for a little bit, it looks like the next game, the next COD game, so 2026 is Call of Duty, might be a Modern Warfare 4 game, which would line up with how I think that this is going, and based on, you know, series releases and all that sort of thing. We've got a small little bit of information here from a Twitter account which I've followed before. It says, Modern Warfare 4 for PS5. According to recent leaks, Modern Warfare 4 will be launching in 2026 with an upgraded engine. It said the engine is a significant upgrade over what they have now. I think what's got to happen now, if you all bear with me for a second, let's rewind to 2018. Now, I can't remember what 2018's COD game was, but it was the year before 2019's Modern Warfare game. Now, that game, COD Modern Warfare 2019, did a lot of work for the Modern Warfare games. It brought Modern Warfare back for starters, which was kind of needed, and it just sort of gave COD like a really big shot in the arm of what it needed. And COD's not in the same place then as what it is now. They're both bad spots in the histories, but I think it's again going to take Infinity Ward to come back to do a, it won't be a reboot because I think it will be an actual sequel to the events of Modern Warfare 3, which is a shame, but still. And yeah, hopefully Infinity Ward can come along next year with something with Modern Warfare 4, and hopefully Activision doesn't get in their way and they can release an actual military shooter, which is what the Modern Warfare games have always been anyway. But yeah, that's what's happening with Call of Duty right now. I don't know what your thoughts are on Black Ops 7, what you've seen, where this might go, and all that sort of stuff.
From what I've seen, it's mostly ridiculous.
Yeah.
The only two things of note is that I'm seeing a lot of stories of people requesting refunds for the game, for which is being granted. And the other interesting thing, Eurogamer, which gave Arc Raiders a 4 out of 10 for its use of AI, gave this game a 6 out of 10 and its use of AI.
That's weird.
Yeah, they just don't want our creators to win.
Yeah. Yeah, so how much like different footage of Black Ops 7 have you seen?
I've seen the giant head thing.
Yeah,
and
the
I've seen,
giant person. Yeah, whatever that is.
Cyborg arm come in and block debris, which totally happens.
Yeah. Did you see like the monster fake Demogorgon looking
no
thing? Okay, yeah, it like swallowed somebody or something like that. So yeah, it's just it's when I look back on like let's say the Modern Warfare 19 reveal trailer, and it's like, you know, all those characters are back and Infinity Ward's back and COD is back, and granted it took 6 years to get here, which was longer than I thought, but like again, it just, when it comes to COD and FIFA, which are two series that are just not doing what they should be right now, but the problem is lack of competition, but again, Battlefield 6 has come along. If you are somebody, because I do not buy FIFA games every year, I have not, you know, done that for like consistently for a while. We sort of do it like, okay, when we've had enough of one of them and a couple of years has gone by, we'll buy either the newest one at a cheaper price or the year before's one, or we'll make some sort of choice like that. Because, for example, I'll probably skip buying 26 completely, and then if it gets to a point where 27 is, like, you know, £20-£30 instead of 70, we'll buy that and then have that for, like, 2 years. Also, that's how we do them now. But if we're going to continue to... It's just a vicious cycle in terms of, okay, FIFA games come out every year, they don't work properly, EA does this and that. COD games come out every year that aren't Modern Warfare games, they do this and that, which is stupid. You just have to stop buying them. You have to stop buying them. And when when was it? A couple of weeks ago, we went through a list of, what was it, the dollar value sales and then, like, unit sales. And almost half of both lists are full of COD games. It's also just a part of the COD community that I don't understand, which is, if you're not into all three of the series, I know there's the sort of FOMO stuff, and there's, you know, your friends are going to be playing the new one. You don't need the new COD game every year. You just don't. And also, if you're somebody, let's say like me, for example, like, okay, I'm not going to buy the Black Ops games because I'm not into that series. The friends that I play COD with don't play the Black Ops games. I have no idea what's going on in Black Ops 7. I'm not up to date on the lore or whatever that's going on with that. So even as somebody who still cares about this series and still wants this series to do better, I have no reason to buy this game. Therefore, my vote with my wallet is better. Otherwise, I'm kind of just buying a game for the sake of it, just because it's the new one that's called COD, and there's really not much past that. So... I don't know, just stop buying COD and FIFA games for a bit. We don't need them. We don't need them. And even as, you know, football fan and that, don't need the FIFA games every year. If players move around, you can do that by yourself or buy them in your career mode. And stop playing Ultimate Team as well. Stop giving these companies just billions every year. Because it just gives them no incentive to make these two series any better. Really? So there you go. Anyway, that's all I got to talk about this week, apart from linking one of my stories to yours. But what do you have to talk about today?
Well, first up, we have a partner preview event from Xbox this Thursday. Players could expect to see new details on 007 First Light, Tides of Annihilation, and Reanimal, along with other games from Tencent, IO Interactive, and THQ Nordic. No specific titles outside of the initial three have been released, but they did announce that every game featured in the event will be part of the Play Anywhere list, which means if you have Game Pass Ultimate, you can play it on pretty much any device you have. Launch time is 4 p.m. Pacific, so that's 7 my time, like midnight your time, I think.
Yeah, midnight, yeah.
I'm sorry, 4 p.m., 1 p.m. Eastern, which would make it 6 p.m. your time.
Yep.
I was reading the wrong thing.
Oh, yep. Cool, yeah, I saw like a little thing with Bob for it today. I think it was like the scheduled video or something. Yeah, still up for seeing more of First Light. I know we did just see like, you know, a good half an hour of it a couple of weeks ago, but it is out in, what, March? So that's not terribly long time away. So that would be cool to see, but very much looking forward to that game and seeing more about what it is. I wouldn't mind seeing, I mean, yeah, you're not going to see Lighthouse in this because it's already come out, unfortunately. But yeah, we'll see what else they've got, I suppose. But yeah, looking forward to seeing more of First Light here. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always willing to see it. Like I said before, I had questions about the gameplay mechanics that I saw popping up in the little sphericals. I was wondering what those are.
Yeah.
Like there was like a little science bottle, a little time clock, and I didn't know what they were in terms of game mechanics.
Yeah, I guess we shall see. Cool, so we'll cover that on the show when
next week.
Yes, next week. So what was the other thing we mentioned that was happening next week?
I don't know.
I can't remember.
I mean, they did the Sony showcased right after we finished recording last week, and it was so uneventful. I forgot about it until just now.
So did I. There you go. All right, what else do you want to talk about?
Well, there is a lot of hubbub around Ubisoft.
Oh, boy.
It very much reminds me of the cold line, the guy gets delivered in an action movie is, you know, they're dead, they just don't know it yet. That very much sums up Ubisoft right now. Okay, so here's what we do know. We do know that they requested a halt on trading shares, and we do know they postponed their financial earnings report for the first half of 2025-2026. No reason has been given, but that much is confirmed, because those were supposed to happen. They did not. The earnings report did not happen, and the stock is not being traded. The official story coming from Chief Financial Officer Frederic Duguet told employees that the halt on the trading is intended to limit unnecessary speculation and market volatility during this short delay. The rumor that's floating around is that there's final negotiations going on that somebody's going to buy Ubisoft within the next week. Now, among that speculation, obviously, Tencent is the leading company that keeps getting brought up because they already own 25% of that spinoff company that Ubisoft did a while back. And so that's just the most logical, you know, company to throw out there.
Yeah, I if they're going to get bought, which is possible, because you have some, while the company's not looked at as being valuable from a fan point of view, you've got a lot of IP that's worth a lot there, and there's a lot that could be done with the company that's just not being fulfilled right now. I sort of don't want Microsoft to buy them if somebody was going to. I wouldn't mind seeing Sony buy them, or I don't know how much money they've got to do that.
Yeah, Microsoft's pretty much the only one with money that could buy them.
Yeah.
But I don't see them doing that just because there's no value in it. It's like when they bought Activision Blizzard, they were really going for that mobile app market. I mean, Activision, yeah, it's got some stuff. Yeah, COD. Well, given the launch of COD right now, I wouldn't exactly say that. But mobile game revenue really put some big numbers on their books.
Right.
And that was really what they wanted.
I with Tencent, I don't think that that would make Ubisoft better. I think it would either make Ubisoft stay the same or actually make them worse. But because again, to me, with Ubisoft, it's not a case of like you need more stuff. You just need to do better with the things that you've got because there's a lot of IP and a lot of series. I know I've said this loads of times. There's a lot of IP and a lot of series that they're just not really doing things with. And how can you expect, not from an investor point of view, because an investor point of view and a fan point of view are two totally different things. How can you expect people to be excited and interesting in what you're doing when you're not really doing very much? Like, okay, you're cranking out Assassin's Creed games because apparently those still make money. Splinter Cell, we'll talk about in a second. You're barely doing anything with that. Rayman, they acknowledged, is alive for an anniversary, so that's nice. Beyond Good and Evil 2, who knows where that is? I was gonna say Sea of Thieves. No, Skull and Bones is doing something. I guess at least they were nice to add a few of their characters to Astrobot. That was nice. But yeah, because at least like we've said with Activision and with EA, they have some games in development or ones that have come out that excite people. Because even if you're a poorly run company, like one of the big bad three, if we call them that, if you've got games that are coming out that are exciting to people and you actually launch them well, like a Battlefield 6, that's at least something. But Ubisoft just doesn't have that right now. I mean, one of the last successes they had, which was an award-winning Prince of Persia game, which granted, I didn't really like, wasn't really for me, but people liked it. They won awards for that, and the studio got the like team got laid off or whatever. So that was weird. So yeah, weird, just weird overall. But yeah, I couldn't see a positive change if Tencent, apart from money investment or whatever, which is what they're probably looking at this for. But just make some good games that people are interested in, and then you can at least use that to work with something. Just do something. Like, should I bring up my Splinter Cell story here now for this, I suppose?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so link to this, as I had in my news as well. This is from Bloomberg. Ubisoft San Francisco was working on a new Splinter Cell game in 2017 that became X-Defiant after live service ambitions. Oh, well, that was a stupid thing to do, wasn't it? This is exactly what I'm talking about, is you quietly apparently then did have one that was going to come out in 2017, which was 8 years ago. Yes, gosh, 8 years ago or so. And that would have been great, and that would have been kind of a critical time for you to do that. And it wouldn't have been that long after, 2013's Conviction, which was a great game. But again, you see the live service stuff, you see the dollar signs, and my guess linked to that, which is what possibly happened here, is I remember when X Defiant was coming out, and even though it's not similar to COD, I remember a lot of people said, like, oh, this could be the COD killer. Well, guess what? X Defiant's dead, and COD is, well, alive in some way, but X Defiant's dead. So, yeah, turning a Splinter Cell game, which would have had more potential than X Defiant, turning it into that is, again, stupid idea. So, sometimes you just can't help people, I guess. But you've in that story there, you've done exactly what I've just been explaining, which is a game which could have had a lot of interest to it. Like, hey, a new Splinter Cell game all the way back in 2017, which was still when people were crying out for one of, like, oh yeah, it's been about, what, 5 years or so, we haven't had a Splinter Cell game. That would have been a great time to do one. And then you turned it into something that didn't really last that long. But yeah, so what do you think of this Splinter Cell story?
Yeah, but like I was saying, it's a par for the course for what Ubisoft does.
Yeah. So again, you have great IP. You just need to do anything with it, really, because you're not doing anything with it. So, but yeah, this whole this thing that you talked about there, and obviously you can link that to this little weird side company that they made. Again, all just shady and weird and crappy, really. So, good luck, Ubisoft, I guess. But one of the ways for you to get out of this hole is to announce an interesting
Stop
game.
digging.
Yeah, stop digging and announce an interesting game. So, there we go. Was there anything else from the main Ubisoft thing you wanted to mention
No,
there?
I mean, like I said before, the stock trading being halted is confirmed. The end earnings call being postponed is confirmed. Everything else is speculation.
So we'll see who, I guess, if they gather any interest, who starts that up, I suppose. All right, what else do you want to talk about today?
Well, we have the absolute tactical nuke that Valve just dropped on the gaming scene. They announced three new pieces of hardware last week. There is the Steam Machine, which is going to be a direct competitor to Series X and PlayStation 5. Hardware puts it about on par, but it's designed to be a box that just runs Steam games. Very minimalist. It's about half the size of the Series X. So literally just mentally image a Series X and chop it in half on the vertical, and that's about the Steam Machine.
Like a square.
Things of note is that it does have a micro SD card on the front for added storage, and you can play the games directly from that SD storage. And they've already released the schematics because the front panel just connects magnetically. It's not really attached, which makes cleaning it out easier. But they've also released the mechanics for 3D printing so people can go nuts customizing the front side of their what people are calling the Gabe Cube, which the first time I heard it was funny. The 473rd time I heard it wasn't so much.
That's actually the first time I've heard that, so yeah.
Yeah, well, it's an obvious thing. It's a cube, and Gabe Newell made it, so Gabe Cube.
All right.
The second piece of tech is version 2 of their Steam controller. The biggest change is that the touch pads are now where the analog sticks would be. The analog sticks are above the touch pad, and the D-pad and the buttons are kind of offset to the right, and everything is parallel, so it's not like the Xbox controller to where the left thumb stick and the right thumb stick are offset. They're all in line. And the other thing is that everything is magnetic based and not mechanical based, and that's supposed to help with stick drift since you don't have an actual physical button to do it. The other big draw of this one is that it's got the magnetic connection, for wireless charging. That also doubles as the Wi-Fi antenna to connect to the computer. So you could play it. You don't have to do any kind of wacky, pairing or whatnot. Just plug it in. That's your connection. When you're done, set it on the puck, it charges. Very simple, very streamlined, very straightforward.
Nice, nice.
But the big thing, which is why I called it the tactical nuke, is the introduction to the Steam Frame, which is Valve's VR headset. And every complaint I've had about VR headsets has been addressed in this machine. Don't know if I'm going to buy one because, one, I don't really play VR games, and two, we haven't gotten prices for any of these things yet. I really doubt it's going to cost the $3,500 that the Apple VR did, but price is going to be a big factor. But one of the complaints that I've always had, one is all the extra crap you have to set up. You don't have to do that with this thing. There are four high-res cameras built into the headset itself that do all the motion tracking, along with the controllers, obviously. The second thing I've always complained about is the wires everywhere. This does not do that. It is 100% wireless, and it has an adapter on dual channels for the VR functions So you have an adapter that connects it to the device. One channel is straight for games, and the other is for Wi-Fi. So those signals aren't getting mucked up with each other. And the big one is, I've always said, they always feel like they're really, really heavy. Well, this thing is stupid light. According to the specs on Steam's website, the weight of the core module plus the head strap is 440 grams, which puts it at under half a kilogram. So it's just under 1 physical pound weight, 15.5 ounces. That is light. That is crazy light.
Nice, nice. I really miss VR gaming. I can't even remember. It would have been when I got the platinum for a rescue mission, which wasn't this year. Because the feasible thing to me to buy would be PSVR 2, because obviously I have the system for that. But again, half a grand for that, so not doing that right now. But I just I've seen like conversations about this popping up and other VR games, and I just miss doing that. Seems very good so far, this thing. It's not something I'm necessarily gonna go for because I don't really need that, and I don't also don't do PC gaming or Steam gaming or anything. And again, when it comes to my Xbox and my PlayStation, I get most of the mainline games and all the main games that we kind of get, and that's well more than enough stuff to play really. So but at least it's an option if it's there, I suppose. And the way you described all the different parts of it sound really, really good, which is important. And
Yeah,
I
everything's supposed to come out spring next year. No prices yet, but if the prices stay competitive, that's going to be a real bite in the market.
which is needed, I think, a little bit. So, yeah, because now again with Xbox putting all their games on PlayStation, I think it's time we have like a another competitor. Because again, Nintendo is and isn't a competitor because they're doing their own thing anyway. But yeah, you don't want Sony running away with this too much. It's like, oh yeah, we'll get Halo and Gears and Forza, and we'll have all our own series and Uncharted and Horizon and Last of Us, and we'll have every game. Which is great for somebody like me, but again, when it comes to any of these entertainment businesses or industries, competition is what everybody should want and need. Because if any company or any film studio, TV studio, game studio gets too comfortable, they get too lazy, products get worse, and that's not good for anybody. So we'll see what this can do, I suppose. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, hardware wise, it's on, like I said, the box is on par with consoles. So it's going to be price. The controller is looks like an upgrade, but again, price. And the VR headset, there's a lot to like about it, but again, price. But if they keep it even remotely competitive, they got a real chance.
Sounds good. All right, we'll see how this thing does. Curious about the shape that you mentioned. I did see a photo of it, and it looks kind of nice. So, I mean, I really, really do like the excuse me, design of the Series X. It's just very nice, compact, very clean. This is very nice. So, certainly nicer than, again, the alien shape of my PlayStation 5, which is, curves and sticks out and whatever. So, we shall see. All right, what else can we talk about today?
That's all I got.
All right, let's move into some emails and feedback. Switch these. Should we switch these around? No, let's put these the way that they are. Anyway, if you'd like to write into the show, let us know what you think of all the Game Awards, any snubs, anything that shouldn't have been nominated. And how many awards do you think Expedition 33 will win? Let us know what you're playing. Let me know if you've played Dispatch as well. And what you think of that and all those bits and pieces. Arc Raiders as well, which Robert's playing. Let us know if you're playing that, what you think of that. And all the other stuff that we mentioned. Matthew at entertainmenttalk.org. Social media is either eTalk UK or Entertainment Talk. And there's information in your show notes. Chris writes in and says, Okay, I'm going to piggyback off of the Nintendo question. Hypothetically, Nintendo buys Naughty Dog and The Last of Us 3 is a Switch 2 exclusive. What does Matt do? Cry, probably. Certainly would have very mixed emotions because, okay, an exciting game which I'd obviously be looking forward to has been announced, even though I think that is more of a when than if situation. But would be on a crappy system. I would, so you're saying Switch 2 exclusive, because if you're saying to me like, okay, Last of Us 3 on a Switch, at least I have a Switch and I still have my Pro Controller and I can use that. I'd probably put in more effort to selling my Switch, which I already kind of have put in effort to doing that. Get as much money for that as I can. I suppose that's the question of would I buy a Switch 2 just for Last of Us 3? Well, I guess I could buy it and then it would still be worth a lot of money. I could maybe just get rid of it after that, I guess. That would certainly be weird if a game like that was on the Switch. Certainly wouldn't play it with the Joy-Cons. I would obviously buy a Pro Controller. And yeah, I would just have to make do with that, I suppose, because I wouldn't miss the game. How much are Switches right now? They're like 300 to 400. What range is it? 300 to 400, I think.
Four to five.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. But again, you're talking about a hypothetical scenario, because obviously that would never happen anyway. But a hypothetical scenario where, because an announcement of Last of Us 3 would be at least later than 2027, because I still don't think they're going to do that till at least Intergalactic comes out. Which hopefully within those at least 2 years, let's just say three, that the Switch 2 would get cheaper, and that would make that situation easier. I mean, what I'd also may as well do is like, okay, try and dip into some Switch 2 games, at least try them, because I would might as well. But yeah, that would be some very big breaking news if like Nintendo went and bought Naughty Dog, I suppose. Anyway, what do you think of this hypothetical question that's been posed to me?
I think the better question would be, would you even want to play the game, considering Nintendo's not known for doing non-family-friendly games?
True.
Would it even be the same experience?
Mm. But well, if it was still Naughty Dog, so it was still like, you know, Craig, and not Craig, Neil, Haley, and then if, you know, Ashley Johnson's in it and everybody else is in it, but yeah, I suppose that would then be a scenario of like the same team, but Nintendo would then, you're saying, like, make it more family friendly, which I don't know how you do that with The Last of Us anything, unless you're making like a Lego game. But yeah, I wonder if you did say to Sony, like, how much for Naughty Dog, what they would, or they just go, no, it's just not, this is just not for sale. That would be like trying to buy, well, 343 from Microsoft. Like, there's some things that I guess just aren't for sale. So yeah. But yeah, if it was like, again, same team, same kind of process, same writing process, but Nintendo was like, yeah, gotta make it a bit more family friendly, I don't know what that would look like. And then lastly, we got Yasmin, who writes in, says, what do you both think of the 2029 rumor of the PS6/next Xbox, and what would you like both consoles to be able to do? So I guess you mean like new features that aren't on the current systems. I definitely would like my PS5 to be able to do quick resume. It's actually genuinely quite annoying that it can't, and it just stands out to me that my Xbox can do that, and it can do it very easily as well. And very quickly as well. I know it's called Quick Resume, but it really is quite quick and quite useful. Because like when I'm navigating games on my Xbox, it's become a thing of, I was like, oh yeah, just switch to that game. You know. So, yeah, I definitely would like my PS6 to be able to do that. Whether Sony's interested in that, I don't know. 2029 feels more realistic than the 2027 rumor that we've seen. But again, I just have the issue of, I don't think this has been a good generation of games. We've had a lot of live service stuff, and while we have had a lot of successful remakes, remasters, you know, things like Dead Space, which I loved, it's been a bit too focused on that, and we still have so many cross-gen games. Like, we still do have a lot of not necessarily first-party stuff, but a lot of stuff that's still coming out on PS4. And in just some situations, it doesn't feel like we've properly, even 5 years, nearly 6 years into this, it doesn't feel like we've properly moved into, you know, proper PS5 games. And while there are some of them that stands out, you still have a big chunk of games that are still cross-buy on PS4. That's why I said that time, I can't remember who it was, but you remember when someone said, like, should I buy this console? And I said, like, look, if you buy a PS4, you've not only got the entire PS4's library of games, which is a fantastic library, but there's still a chunk of games coming out now that you won't miss out on because, okay, you'll have a lesser version of them, but you'll still be able to get them. So, kind of makes the PS4 more valuable. Because I still, if you do a PS6 in 2027, I just don't know how the games... I don't know at the moment that with the current landscape of gaming, if you go, right, let's put a PS6 out, what that does to the games that you got in development. So, like, push that another 2 years and let, like, the current flock of games that are out in the next, you know, 2 to 4 years come out, and then... But that's not a console issue, that's like an ideas issue, that's a development issue, that's a sort of, like, you know, stop making certain games. It won't matter if it's on a PS5 or a PS6, because it's about ideas and IP and that sort of thing. So yeah, for my Xbox, what would I like it to be able to do? I don't use it as much as my PS5, so I don't notice things as much. But the quick resume really is a kind of a game changer. Plus, you can actually, like, fully shut down your Xbox, like, take it somewhere if you need to or whatever, and it will still have your quick resume situations. Not situation. It will still have those saved, which is, that's even more wild than what it could be. I like the controller. Yeah, I don't really use it enough to, like, sort of, oh, here's this thing that I don't like about it. Whereas, yeah, that's the thing that's really standing out to me about my PS5, that I can't just have save states for games. So, yeah. Anyway, what would you like the next, I guess, next consoles to be able to do that they can't currently do?
Not be so expensive.
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah. But, yeah, what about, like, features?
No, but seriously, they're not even getting half optimization out of the machines that are out now. There's nothing, you know, hardware-wise that you can do with the new machine that would even be worth a damn.
Yeah. But yeah, do you, like, is there anything you look at on, let's say, your Xbox where you think, okay, I wish it could do this, that, or do something better, or anything like that?
Honestly, no. I mean, I'm with you. Love the quick resume. Big fan of that.
Yeah.
I haven't played too many games on it. I've been more PC gaming for the smaller indie games that you couldn't do. Well, not that you couldn't do, but that you generally wouldn't do on a non-keyboard and mouse game. Like for my city builders, world builders, you can kind of play them on consoles, but they don't really work as well. So my Xbox is like 80% streaming, 20% gaming. But yeah, just stop going up in price.
Yeah.
Stop. Like, mommy, make the bad man stop.
Yeah, we don't want them to be $700 to $800, so.
Oh, I know it's a tinfoil hat, but I strongly suspect the price increase for the Xboxes so that when the next one comes out and it's $900, it's not as much of a sticker shock.
yeah. What are you thinking about 2029?
That's fine. I couldn't care less. I doubt I'm going to replace, unless it, like, physically breaks and I can't get another Series X at a reasonable price, I wouldn't buy the new one, and I don't know that I'd replace the old one.
Yeah. I'm in a situation with specifically with my Xbox that again, a lot of those just say next Xbox games would probably be fine on that system. Plus I don't use it as much, so I'm kind of the same scenario there where like as long as they played some of the new games that came out, at least for like, the first couple of years. With the PS6, I might hold off longer than what I did for the 5, because I think next generation I want to keep more of an eye on the cross gen games. Because sometimes I do play a game on PS5 and think like, okay, I could have had this still on PS4. Okay, it won't be as good and etc. etc. But I don't know. Might wait a little bit longer. It depends what launches with the PS6 and when we get close to that time, I suppose. So, yeah, like wait for that. When was it that I got my PS5? I think it was in 2021. So like the first year of games had come out. I think it was. Because Ratchet and Clank, that's the first game I played on PS5 with Rift Apart, and I think that was a year 2 game, which would have been 2021. And then didn't get a Series X till much later. And the thing is, as well, with buying the next Xbox, if you are, which they seem like they are going down a path of, we're gonna put eventually all of our games on PS5. I mean, if you're doing Halo, then nothing else is off the table. Then I may be in more of a scenario where I just wait for that game to come to PlayStation and play it there. So, but again, if there's so many games floating around, give me a quick resume on PS6. I mean, Xbox didn't even go cheap with that, because it wasn't even like, oh yeah, you can quick resume 2 games, so an additional one. It's like, no, you can do 4 at once. That's actually quite a lot. So I know with like if you've got an online game and you go back to that for quick resume, you'll like need to reload it, but it's still quicker than doing it from a fresh boot up screen point. So anyway, all right. So we've got a few for this week's podcast. We'll see what gets announced between now and next week. Maybe Ubisoft gets bought. Maybe they get some interested buyers. We'll talk about that next week if it happens, and anything else that's coming out. But yeah, entertainmenttalk.org, podcast platforms, Entertainment Talk for TV, games, films, Man United podcast. Just a couple of reminders. United cast back on Monday. Everton at home. We'll see what the hell we do next there. Breaking Bad tomorrow, season 4, episode 11. Two podcasts, 22nd November, Saturday, 2 p.m., 2:30 p.m. Check those out as well. Had a lot of fun doing those. Dispatch review, possibly Thursday, maybe Friday. We'll see how things go. Who knows? Maybe it's a longer episode or something, but we'll see how that goes. Maybe some impressions of, I almost said Lightyear. No, not Lightyear, Lighthouse. Next week, if I get round to that. More upgraders for you? Or anything else gonna play?
Probably more Arc Raiders, yeah.
So see how that goes. But yeah, that's all of our upcoming things and all that sort of stuff. Again, classic reviews update if you want to check that out. And yeah, you can listen to more of our stuff on the places I've mentioned, word of mouth, social media. If someone mentions the thing we podcasted on, please tell them about said podcast. Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers. For the ad-free podcast review options for that as well. If you'd like to, TV and film news over on geektown.co.uk, Geektown Radio on Tuesdays. There is a new fresh episode ready and available for you to listen to, so you can go from here to there and get your newest TV and film news. So check that out. I already said Patreon, didn't I? Yep. YouTube is Entertainment Talk Plays as well for all those video game bits and pieces. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Goodbye.